Welcome back to Inside Personal Growth. This is Greg Voisin, the host of Inside Personal Growth, and I want to thank all my listeners who come from around the world to listen to the words of wisdom from our authors. And today, joining me from New York and is Michael J. Gelb. Michael is the author of many books, but he is also the co-author of a book with Kelly Howell, who's joining us from Santa Fe, New Mexico, called Brain Power, Improve Your Mind as You Age. And this is really a hot topic that the two of you are addressing. And I want to thank you both for being on the program with us. And I want to let our listeners know just a tad bit about each of you before we actually get into the interview. Michael is the author of the best-selling book called How to Think Like Leonardo da Vinci. He is the world's leading authority on the application of genius thinking to personal and organizational development. He's a pioneer in the fields of creative thinking, accelerated learning, and innovative leadership. Michael leads seminars for organizations such as DuPont, Merck, Microsoft, Nike, Raytheon, and YPO. And Michael's website for all my listeners is www.michaelgelb.com. And as it is for Kelly, she's the founder of Brain Sync, S-Y-N-C. She's a highly acclaimed for pioneering work in healing and mind expansion with more than 2 million audio programs in print and decades of experience. She is a leader in the field of self-help audio. Kelly has worked in cooperation with scientists, medical professionals, and brain researchers to develop her groundbreaking audio programs, and her website is www.brainsync.com. Well, thanks both for taking the time, and I want to start this off right away, and either of you can answer this question. You state in the book right off there's an exceptional man by the name of Bill. He's 90 years old, and he's just full of life. I mean, this guy is volunteering his time. He's engaged. It's a great story, by the way, to start off the book for my listeners. You know, what is it that keeps Bill in this such amazing brain health? I mean, you know, we look at some people as they age and they get Alzheimer's. It sets in early. We look at other people. I have a mother who's 90 years old who has a brain that she remembers almost everything. Tell us what some of the secrets are, because your book is truly about the brain power.
Can I start, Michael?
Sure.
Okay. Well, Bill intuitively practiced everything that Michael and I discovered in this long process of researching the book Brain Power. Bill practiced everything that we advise in the book to keep your brain healthy, fit, muscular, strong throughout your entire life. So he was a perfect role model for us, don't you think, Michael?
Very much so. And big part of what Kelly and I have aimed to do in Brain Power is to help people dramatically transform their expectation around aging. And the images we get in our society, if you turn on your television, the image you get of older people is very different from the image we start with, which is this vital, vibrant, mentally sharp fellow that we give you a little profile of. Instead, on TV, all you see are older people in advertisements for various pharmaceuticals. As Dave Barry likes to point out in his classic work, Dave Barry Turns 40, the image of aging on television in America is about as attractive as death by maggot.
I'd agree with you, Michael. So
and Greg, too, you know, just the word senior in our culture conjures up, you know, a cogity old person who's lost their memory and is wobbling around, whereas in other cultures, people as they get older are revered, respected for their wisdom. We have a real thing going on here in the West that is very degrading.
I couldn't
to
agree.
Older people.
I couldn't agree with you more. Now, you know, the whole thing about your book and many of these books, but yours is exceptional, is that neuroscientists are now telling us that our brain can improve with age. And what I think my listeners would truly like to know is, what are some of the new findings in neuroscience about this amazing muscle that's in our head that can get these neurons to fire faster and to change pathways. I mean, we actually are seeing people that are, you know, having strokes, right? And they're being rehabilitated and those new neural pathways are being reset. Tell us a little bit more about this neuroscience and how it affects our ability as we age.
Well, we all grew up with a notion that was based on the science of the 50s and the 60s that stated that your brain was destined to deteriorate starting at around age 30, and there wasn't much you could do about it. And that notion has been completely overturned in our lifetime. And part of it, by the way, it's just fascinating to note that part of how that notion was overturned was the development of the MRI and brain scanning technology. So all of a sudden we could look at brains as they engaged in various tasks and were amazed initially to discover that they were changing and evolving and growing. So in other words, we grew up with a paradigm that we call neurostatic. And neuro means neuron, static, obviously, it's not moving, it's not changing. And the new paradigm, everybody's familiar today with the word neuroplasticity, neuro brain cell plasticity, flexible and adaptable. But even if you've heard of the notion of neuroplasticity, you may not have fully incorporated the implications into your own attitude about aging. And as Kelly and I interviewed neuroscientists, there was a consensus. The question is no longer whether or not your mind is designed to improve with use. Indeed, it is. The only question is, okay, if the mind is designed to improve with use, what's the best way to use it? And Brain Power aims to answer that question in very, very practical terms.
One of the things that we've found, Greg, too, was that you and I, all of us, have been very involved in self-help, self-improvement, the human potential movement for many years. And so we intuitively knew that, you know, positive thoughts and positive self-talk worked. Now the neuroscientists are saying, yes, indeed, it does work. And that the more you repeat a phrase like, I'm losing my memory, it actually creates a network in your brain, a neural network, that makes it difficult for you to remember.
Interesting. Well, you know, you guys both cite this Ellen Langer in your book about the counterclockwise study, and I thought it was kind of fascinating. I want to bring it up because perfect timing, Kelly. And the power of the positive mindset. Can either of you comment on Langler's study and truly, you mentioned a little bit about it there, but truly the implications of that study?
Sure. Dr. Langer, just for people listening that may not know about her study, came up with this crazy idea of taking a group of elderly gentlemen on a retreat and immersing them in back in time. It was like a back in time experiment where they were to imagine themselves who they were, how they were 20 years earlier. And she retrofitted a monastery and prepped them. She took tests before the the week long retreat, and these men were very old, decrepit, they were in the care of their families. She took them on a bus to this monastery and thought, what have I gotten myself into? I've got all these men. I don't know, you know, what's going to happen. This idea was great on paper, but here we are at the monastery and I'm in charge of them for a week. And when they got there, the first thing she did was she told them all, I don't care how you get your suitcases in, but, you know, you can open them, take a shirt out at a time, but you guys are on your own. You're supposed to be in the mindset of 20 years earlier. And, you know, from the very beginning, she put them in that frame of mind. They watched TV shows from that period. They listened to music. They talked about football games of that time and horse races and really total immersion. And she said, after the first few days, these men were playing football, touch football with her. So they had this dramatic shift while they were there. And then when she retested them after, they had improved in their memory, even their photographs, they looked younger. What else? Oh, their arthritic fingers had lengthened. There were pictures of men with arthritis in their hands, and that their hands had smoothed out and lengthened. What else, Michael, did you find?
Well, I think that's the most striking image from the counterclockwise study is, imagine, it's one thing, you know, that your score in a memory test improves, your rating of perceived well-being improves. And this is all in comparison to a control group who went away for a week and just reminisced about life 20 years earlier. But these men lived as if they were 20 years younger. And in the course of just 1 week, their shriveled arthritic fingers actually lengthened. So those of us who've always studied the effect of the mind on the body, it's particularly profound when it comes to our attitude towards aging. And then Langer's colleague, Dr. Becca Levy, did a long-term study of 650 people, divided them in two groups, those who had a negative attitude towards aging and those with a positive attitude towards aging. And the group with the positive attitude outlived the negative attitude group on average by more than 7.5 years. Here's Dr. Marco Iacoboni from the Amundsen Lovelace Brain Mapping Center at UCLA. We've met and interviewed Marco. He's an MD and a PhD. He's one of the world's leading neuroscientists. Here's what he says. The brain has an almost boundless capacity for reshaping itself over the years, for adapting, for expanding its power, while accumulating knowledge and recording experiences. Modern neuroscience tells us that the aging brain is no longer the declining brain, but rather a learning organ whose limits are still unexplored.
And it's so true, because we're finding out so much more about the brain and the mind and consciousness. I don't know if we'll still get our hands, scientists, around the concept of consciousness, but I want to talk about three elements.
Oh, they're getting close, though, Greg. They really are.
Well, they are, and I believe you. Every day we make progress in this arena. But there are three areas you talk about in your book, which you really say are essential practices. And I want to talk about these, because these are three essential practices that anybody can do, but that are truly going to exercise this muscle and improve its ability to perform over time. And it's gratitude, forgiveness, and humor. Can either one of you comment about these three practices and how they can improve our mental acuity?
Well,
yes,
first of all, I'll start with this.
I was
waiting to see. You know.
I'm grateful to have such a brilliant co-author.
I am grateful to have an even more brilliant, wonderful, charming co-author who's such a gentleman. Such a gentleman. So, forgiveness and gratitude. If you think about it, if we are living our lives holding resentment, anger, frustration, disappointment, all those toxic emotions, we now know have a physiological effect on our health, our immune system, and the way our brain functions. So the attitude, in a way, if we go back to the story that you mentioned, Bill, our model elderly man in our book, he practiced forgiveness and positive thinking and giving gratitude, and it changes your whole perception of life. It changes your neurochemistry. It improves the way you can think. It creates a coherent field of brainwave activity, which is part of my area that I work in, which makes everything in your brain work better.
Michael, do you have anything to add to that, or you want me to move on to the next question?
Well, you know, Kelly really cut to the essence of it, and the only thing I'd add is that, of course, we all know that gratitude and forgiveness in particular are the teachings of all the world's spiritual traditions. What's wonderful to now discover is that contemporary research into the mind, into the brain, into our behavior validates this ancient wisdom. So the research project on gratitude and thankfulness, convened by Drs. Emmons and McCullough, they conclude, here's a really simple practice people can do. They conclude, in an experimental comparison, those who kept gratitude journals reported fewer physical symptoms, felt better about their lives as a whole, and were more optimistic about the upcoming week compared to those who recorded hassles or neutral life events. So once again, you know, we're catching up to this common sense or wisdom of personal development and self-improvement and starting to validate it through research practice.
Oh, and it's so important, because I think for those people who are scientists out there that are listening, or people from, pardon me, I was originally from the Show Me State, you now have some proof that says that this is working. So,
oh, and it's so true, Greg, and we also have, now we have the brain imaging technology that we didn't have 20 years ago. So they can see now that if you meditate, in, you know, a week of meditation will begin to transform your brain.
We'll speak
and
about
affect
that.
The areas of how you respond to stress and handle your emotions. So
this is an off-the-wall question, Kelly, and it wasn't one of my questions that I had created for this podcast, but the Mind Life Institute and Dalai Lama are doing a tremendous amount of work on brain research as it relates to meditation, and you were talking about gratitude, forgiveness, compassion. Do you want to make a comment about that? Do you have any particular expertise or knowledge in that area that you want to make a comment to our listeners on, and how that truly affects? And we all know that meditation affects our ability to focus, our ability to be more present in the now, and our ability to reduce stress in our lives. Anything else you want to comment about that?
Well, I think the famous study was done by Richard Davidson, where he plugged in a group of monks that were doing compassion meditation, and showed that in the front, I'm not sure if I'm going to get this exactly right, but I think it was the front right lobe of the brain, they had increased gamma activity. And, you know, it's almost like they have a more highly developed frontal lobe, which is the executive function of our brain. So they're actually, you know, if you're going to look at the brainwave aspect and gamma waves, that they're actually more focused and alert and aware, because they have this high-frequency brain activity happening in that part of their brain.
Well, it truly is fascinating what's going on here. Now, Michael or Kelly, there never had previously till now, you know, you look at people like Dr. Amen and all these people that are out there speaking about the brain, and you guys as well, this connection to the average person out there is listening today about the effects of exercise on our brains. You know, people have always divided exercise that they do for the body, and it really wasn't connected to the brain. Talk to them, if you would, about all of the chemical transformations that are occurring in their body as a result of this, and the true effects it's having on their longevity, clarity, and continue to keep focus and reduction of Alzheimer's, if you would.
I'm going to let Michael talk about this, but I just remembered something, Michael. We did our final deal agreement at the gym to do this book together,
right?
Remember? I was doing sit-ups. And you were doing weights, and we were talking about doing this book. So, yeah.
That's why we were sharp enough to be able to actually write it. I want to go back to just briefly mention the Dalai Lama, because I was blessed earlier this year. Actually, it was last year, 2011, down in Australia. I keynoted the World Conference on Happiness. And the keynote speaker just before me just happened to be His Holiness the Dalai Lama. which is a really good setup person for a talk to 3,000 people. And his message was on the power and simplicity of a meditation practice, not just to improve your brain waves and sharpen your memory, but for the all-important condition that we all seek of happiness. And you know, there are a lot of books about longevity. The focus of our book is not so much on longevity per se, because we don't want you just to live longer. We want you to be happier while you live longer. And people will find in the book, and we have the chapter and verse on these studies about the way meditation affects your brain. Kelly mentioned the one by Davidson. There's also the classic study by Britta Holzel. She and her colleagues discovered that meditating just 30 minutes a day for 8 weeks, and I'm quoting from our book now, can increase the density of gray matter in brain regions associated with memory, stress, and empathy. So that's a lot of what helps make us experience fulfillment and happiness. Now, as far as exercise is concerned, we talked to Dr. Walter Bortz, who's an MD. He's 80 years old, and you know, when I first sent him the piece that we had written about him, and I said, you know, Dr. Bortz has run 39 marathons. He wrote back to me and said, please update this. It is now 40 marathons. So he's 80 years old. He wrote the classic work, Living Longer for Dummies, and Dr. Bortz says, check this out. This is a quote from Dr. Bortz on page 69 of our book. Almost everything we've been taught about growing older has been wrong. Frailty, heart disease, loss of an active sex life, and memory loss are just a few problems typically associated with aging. All of these symptoms have less to do with chronology than with lack of conditioning. Then he goes on to say, exercise provides a 30-year age offset. So it becomes more important the older we get.
Most definitely.
And I'm just going to add one little exclamation point on the end is one of the most exciting areas of research in neuroplasticity is the idea of neurogenesis, which is the creation of new brain cells. And the one thing that most neuroscientists agree on is that exercise does help to create new brain cells.
So now you guys have talked. Yeah, you've talked about the importance of exercise, and I get that. Now we're talking about nutrition for the brain. Now I'd like to kind of shift gears, because every one of these chapters in here in your book, what you've done is you've provided information about how important rest, sleep, and rest are, how important diet is, how important exercise is. Truly, if I'm sitting out there as one of my listeners, going, okay, I'm listening to these guys about my brain. What should I be putting in my mouth to help my brain function more properly? And what, more importantly, shouldn't I be putting in my mouth to make sure that I'm as acute and aware as possible and that I have a long, healthy brain life?
Well, Michael was very, very careful about this, because we really we didn't want this chapter, you know how there are fads with vitamins? So we wanted to make sure that everything that goes in this chapter is absolutely essential and proven to be really good for your brain. Right, Michael?
Very much so. And
you were a real stickler about this. We couldn't go,
yeah.
We couldn't really get off track anywhere here. So if you want to share what some of those...
We came up with seven really key things that... everybody can do. First one's just to maintain hydration, because your brain's 80% water, and a lot of ailments, mental and physical, are a function of chronic low-level dehydration. So just staying hydrated. Another consensus from the neuroscientists that we talked to was you got to start your day with breakfast. Obviously, something healthy, but breakfast jumpstarts your metabolism, gets the blood flowing, and it's blood, of course, that delivers the oxygen to your brain, And your brain's on average about 2% of your body's weight. It uses 20% of your oxygen. Very important antioxidants. You want them in your everyday diet, and you can supplement for them, minimizing and eliminating the unnecessary. So got to cut down on unnecessary sugar, the high glycemic carbohydrates, any kind of unnecessary additive or preservative. Bottom line is, as Michael Pollan says in Omnivore's Dilemma, just don't eat anything your great-great-grandmother wouldn't recognize as food. Supplementation, as Kelly mentioned, we were really rigorous about this. What we did, besides reading a lot of the research, we just asked the neuroscientists that we interviewed, what do you take every day? And what we put in the book is what we take every day. So starting with really simple things like just a high-quality multivitamin, multimineral, and then things that some people might be less familiar with, like the importance of turmeric and probiotics, and obviously adequate fiber and roughage in the diet. It really does make a difference. We also emphasize two things that you may not always hear so much about, the importance of enjoying every meal and tuning into yourself. It's a kind of a mindfulness diet, which is all about just asking yourself the critical question, how hungry am I? What am I really, really in the mood for? And most importantly, how will it make me feel afterwards? And then there's lots of good news in this chapter, because we discovered that in moderation, red wine with dinner, a high-quality dark chocolate, and good quality coffee are all really good for you. Isn't that great news?
That's good news for all my listeners.
Really good news. Michael turned me. I had given up coffee because I thought coffee was bad for me, and I'd been a tea drinker for years. And I'd go over to his office to work, and he turned me on to the best coffee in the world.
Hey, so question.
And now I'm ordering it from Hawaii, and I have my cup every morning.
Question for both of you. How important did you find, because I've spent a lot of time with Dr. Daniel Amen, who, by the way, put a nice endorsement on your book. But, you know, he talks about omega-3 fatty acids and high doses of omega-3 fatty acids. What did you guys find about that? I know that each morning I get up, I take two 1,200 milligram tablets of that based on some of his advice. Were we finding a true connection between that?
Yes, omega-3s are really, really important, and it really depends. If you eat a diet that is high in fish, you eat a lot of fish, then you're already getting a lot of omega-3s.
Okay, good.
So, it's kind of like you have to balance it out depending on. If you don't eat any fish, then you definitely want to dose up on it.
Well, so because of all your brainwave activity, and Michael, I know you did research here with Kelly on this, your chapter, Rest Peacefully to Delay Resting in Peace. We keep hearing these stories that, you know, you got to have a minimum of 8 hours of sleep, get into a certain state of sleep. I know as a world, the reports keep coming out, you guys, that as a country, we're sleep deprived. What is that depravity doing as it relates to the brain? And truly, what would be your recommended if you were to give somebody a prescription for sleep, what would it be?
Well, first of all, what it does to the brain is it impairs memory, it impairs cognition, it impairs your reaction time. They've done so many studies, you know, for example, in the Army or the Air Force with pilots, you know, and one of the remedies is napping, believe it or not. If you're not getting enough sleep, then taking a nap, you can get almost all the benefits of meditating from taking an afternoon nap for 45 minutes. And many, performers and athletes and, you know, will specifically take a nap before they, you know, play a piano, you know, at a concert or whatever. So napping is really essential if you don't get enough sleep at night. Michael, do you want to add anything to that?
I sure do, because the research on from napologists does demonstrate tremendous benefits Dr. Mark Rosekind, working with NASA pilots, found 20-minute nap resulted in 36% performance improvement. And this is a pretty serious group of people when it comes to measuring performance. And Dr. Sarah Mednick wrote a great book called Take a Nap, Change Your Life. She was a student of Dr. Robert Stickgold, who's done the work at Harvard, showing that, again, our folk wisdom about the importance of sleeping on a problem turns out to be scientifically valid. And, of course, it's not a coincidence that Leonardo da Vinci, Thomas Edison, and many of the other greatest geniuses in human history all took regular naps. But having said all this, because we try to deliver in the book both practical guidance on what's the best way to take a nap, how can you sleep more soundly. We guide our readers on a practice of meditation that anybody can do. But one thing we all know, if we're involved in personal development and personal growth, is we all need all the help we can get. And some folks just have trouble taking a nap. Some folks have trouble falling asleep. Some people can't sit still and meditate. And part of how this book came to be, Kelly and I are friends, and she is the creator of the amazing BrainSync brainwave technology. And I've been using it for a long time. I travel around the world. I get jet lag. Even a couple hours going from Santa Fe to New York, where I am now, 2 hours just throws you off your sleep. But I put on the headphones. I listen to the BrainSync Delta program, and I am suddenly having a restful sleep. And I'm on the airplane, and I'm trying to pass the time, and I think this would be a great opportunity to meditate, but I can't quite calm my mind with the turbulence and so on. So I put on my BrainSync audio program, and all of a sudden, thanks to Kelly, my brain waves are indistinguishable from an advanced meditator's. And in our desire to just try to help our readers as much as we can, Brain Power comes with a free download of Kelly's remarkable BrainSync audio program. So
yep,
when
also
people get the book, they can get the program.
Yes, and now I've memorized the page because everybody wants to know what page.
On 165. So I'll tell you. 165, and right in the middle, I'll let my listeners know, you get a complimentary audio program at www.brainpowerdownload.com. There's a coupon code, MEDITATEME.
That goes with the book, though.
Right. But that's what's in 165, reading right. So just for my listeners, there is a free download there for you who get this book. And Kelly has a pretty extensive website of various CDs that are covering the gamuts of meditation, creating a life where you be much more peaceful, peace mind, more focused. Definitely go to her website. And Michael, if people want to learn more about you, it's www.michaelgelb. I've gone to that website as well. Michael is the author of many books. I only actually listed one of them, but if you want to update yourself on that. I have one last question. You guys had a foreword in this book by Tony Buzan, and Buzan is an interesting guy who started the mind mapping. Why Tony, and what did he have to offer to you with relation to mind mapping and improving our brain power?
Well, Tony,
we actually created this book using a mind map. Michael is one of the premier teachers, or you were his protege, basically, of mind mapping. And working with Michael on this book, we actually started off with a mind map.
Very cool.
And I interviewed Tony because I have a podcast called Theater of the Mind. And after I interviewed him, I just said, oh, this man is brilliant. He's been doing this for so long. Michael, you know, what do you think? Could he do our foreword? And Michael, you have a long-term relationship with Tony, so you take it from here.
Absolutely.
He's a brilliant man.
We wrote the book using mind maps. I've written all my books using mind maps. I learned mind mapping from Tony. And Tony, just turning 70, He's also the person who started the World Memory Championships, which are just held in China. And he is one of the foremost practitioners of memory techniques. So at age 70, he's living proof of improving the mind as one gets older. And as the creator of so many of these mind improvement technologies, we just thought how cool would it be to have him bless our book with a foreword, which he graciously
did. And you got this is a great book. And Kelly and Michael, thanks for being on Inside Personal Growth. And for all my listeners, we've been on with Michael Gelb and Kelly Howell. And the book is called Brain Power, Improve Your Mind As You Age.
And Greg, can I just say one last thing about the book? Because there's so many books out there on neuroplasticity. And what makes our book different is it really is a blueprint. It's sort of, you don't have to wade through all the research. It's just, oh, okay, here's what you do.
Right, it is. It's a very practical book. I mean,
I went
through it and, you know, each chapter has something that can be applied to each one of my listeners. They talk about the exercise and nutrition and all the various factors that you need to know to improve your brain health. And these books are available for all my listeners. We'll put links to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, obviously. This is available as an ebook, I'm certain. So there's no reason for you not to get it. And I truly would encourage you to go check out Kelly's website, where there are lots of opportunities for you to download audio tracks which assist you in improving not only your brain power but meditation skills as well. Thank you both for being on Inside Personal Growth. Truly was a pleasure having you with us. Truly enlightened me with relation to additional wisdom you have around me keeping my own brain sharp. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Greg. You take care.